Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Good evening, listeners, brave navigators of the enigmatic and the concealed. Have you ever felt the pull of the unanswered, the allure of the mysteries that shroud our existence? For more than a decade, a unique comic publisher has dared to dive into these mysteries, unafraid of the secrets they might uncover. This audacious entity is Paranoid American. Welcome to the mystifying universe of the Paranoid American podcast.
Launched in the year 2012, Paranoid American has been on a mission to decipher the encrypted secrets of our world. From the unnerving enigma of MKUltra mind control to the clandestine assemblies of secret societies. From the awe-inspiring frontiers of forbidden technology to the arcane patterns of occult symbols in our very own pop culture. They have committed to unveiling the concealed realities that lie just beneath the surface. Join us as we navigate these intricate landscapes, decoding the hidden scripts of our society and challenging the accepted perceptions of reality.
Folks, I've got a big problem on my hands. There's a company called Paranoid American making all these funny memes and comics. Now, I'm a fair guy. I believe in free speech, as long as it doesn't cross the line. And if these AI-generated memes dare to make fun of me, they're crossing the line.
This is your expedition into the realm of the extraordinary, the secret, the shrouded. Come with us as we sift through the world's grand mysteries, question the standardized narratives, and brave the cryptic labyrinth of the concealed truth. So strap yourselves in, broaden your horizons, and steel yourselves for a voyage into the enigmatic heart of the Paranoid American podcast, where each story, every image, every revelation brings us one step closer to the elusive truth.
Okay, Paranoid American podcast, episode something or other. And I just want to say how much I love being able to do this and that there's other people that are listening and giving feedback and asking for other kind of topics and always suggesting improvements. And anyone that knows that's reached out to me and suggested that I try something different or, you know, change the camera angle, turn the volume this way, anything at all that can make this better, let me know. And I want to also introduce Maverick Approach. I think we met recently on a show with a few other people, and we were getting into all sorts of different angles, and I was like, man, there's so many things that I wanted to like just hyper focus on, but I want to steal the show and like start passing the mic around. So this is my opportunity, first of all, to introduce everybody to Maverick Approach, and also to like pick his brain about some really like specific topics that I don't see come up a lot. So welcome aboard, and plugs up front, just let people know where to find you.
Yeah. So thanks for having me on the show. You know, I love what you're doing. And yeah, you can find me at maverickapproach.com. Also on X, it's Mav, M-A-V, Approach. And then also on Instagram, it's Maverick Approach.
All right. There we go. Now we're just going to chill right here for the rest of the time. And
all right.
So when I first started talking to you, you were about to come out with like an exclusive interview with an ex-Nickelodeon star. And it was like right at the height. And I think it was even like pre-P. Diddy when we first talked. So, yeah. So many things have transpired since then. Also, you launched a platform, like a crypto platform, that when we first started talking, it was kind of right on the cusp. So a whole bunch of stuff has happened. There's a million things that I want to get into. I figure let's start with the Nickelodeon thing first. So if anyone's unaware, if you're watching this show, you probably already know about all this stuff, but there was TV show about Nickelodeon. It was like a 4 or 5 part series, and they got into Dan Schneider, and they got into like some other people, and that was kind of it. And it was like a blip, and it disappeared outside of the internet taking hold of it. And I think that it's starting to kind of grow its own legs, and people are asking more questions. And you're one of the people that did that. So what, first of all, like, what's your take on it? Just like at a high level, like if you're walked up to a group of people that had no idea what the hell you were talking about, and they're like, yeah, I used to watch Nickelodeon when I was a kid. No, what do you mean creepy stuff? Like, how do you break the ice?
It's a tough block of ice to break, but you know, you know what it is like when you're growing up and you have all these fond memories about, you know, Nickelodeon and Disney and all these great shows. What happens is when you get older and, you know, you don't want to get, you know, jaded and whatnot, you know, for all these things coming out and, you know, kind of tarnish those memories, but we're in the age of truth right now, and you kind of have to like look back and see like, wait a minute, that doesn't look right. And that's what's kind of what's happening right now. So if you don't know, you know, Nickelodeon, you know, they've had a show called, or it's a documentary about all these, you know, different Nickelodeon stars coming out saying that they were abused, they were, you know, molested, all this crazy stuff. And, you know, these are huge stars like Drake Bell. He was abused for a long time. He had his own show. And, you know, all these other people, you know, Dan Schneider, with him, he was, you know, pretty much a creep and doing all these, you know, really inappropriate, you know, gags on his, you know, some of his employees and all this stuff. There's even a group called the Creep Club that came out of this whole thing. And it was Brian Peck and a few others that was sexually abusing all these people on set.
And did they call themselves the Creep Club, or was that something other people called them?
No, other people called them that. I don't think they were called themselves.
That would have been even, that would have been even creepier if they called themselves that.
Right, exactly. So, but yeah, they you know, they kind of, you know, coined that name. And what happened is you start to look at all these different things. Like on the show, I don't know if you remember the Amanda Bynes show, right? And all that and all these other things. They created a character called Taint. Her last name was Taint. I believe her first name was, I forgot her first name. It was like Judy Taint or something Taint. But it was kind of like an inside adult joke, but when you're a kid looking at it, you're like, okay, you know, this is funny. But now you're under, like, you're like, wait a minute, Taint. Like all these different little things that they were doing, you're kind of looking at like, okay, I see what was really going on, kind of where their head's at. So what came about and what came across my desk is that a friend of a friend came to me and was like, hey, you know, I see what you're doing. I see your page and whatnot. You need to interview somebody because it's a never before seen or heard another scenario that came out of Nickelodeon. And this person was on a show called Animorphs. Do you remember that show?
Animorphs? I didn't even know that was a Nickelodeon show.
It was. So it was syndicated in a few different places, but they also had it on Nickelodeon. And they had like 2 seasons of it. It was a hit show. It was kind of like a Power Ranger-esque type of show.
I almost would say it was superior to Power Rangers, at least in concept, if not budget.
Yeah, yeah. They had like groundbreaking, well, at least back then, groundbreaking like shape-shifting stuff. And like,
and the really memes, cool. Bro. Like, we're still seeing Animorph memes to this day that I'm laughing about. So,
right.
Yeah, I'm team Animorphs if it's between this and Kaiju.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But one of the stars, I did an interview with him. He did a tell all and he was abused on set. Told me how the whole thing unfolded. He never told a soul. And what happens is, it's like, you know, I asked him, I'm like, so why now? Why are you coming forward? He was just saying like their strength in numbers. And at that time he didn't want to jeopardize his whole situation, you know, and that's kind of what they do. They use their power, positions of power, to like say, hey, if you tell anybody, you're going to get fired or this or that, you're going to get shunned. So it's hard for a kid to like grasp all that, right? And deal with, you know, the pressures of being famous and you know, potentially holding up their whole family financially. So it's a hard, you're between a rock and a hard place. So it's on my Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/the Maverick Approach, the full unedited full interview is up there right now. So, yeah, it was crazy.
So something similar happened, not to the Nickelodeon expose, but like the whole Me Too movement was what, like 3 or 4, maybe more years ago. It's kind of a rush because right after that was the whole like worldwide, everyone's getting coughs and stuff. But before that, it was like picking up steam, and then they took down like the big guy. They took down Weinstein, and then it was just like, oh, thank God that's over. You know what I mean? We eradicated the source of the problem. It's out of there. Hollywood's clean. We're good to go now. Everyone start spending your money. Like the bad guy is done. He's been dealt with. And that was the only one. And in the Nickelodeon series, they kind of pitch it like, don't worry, we've exposed Dan Schneider. No criminal charges, by the way, no lawsuits or anything, but we've exposed them on this TV show. So rest assured. And Brian Peck, they got him, and here's the court documents and everything. And it's almost like this big cathartic release for the nation to be like, oh, thank God, you know, that's done with. Thank God that, you know, none of that abuse is going on anymore. But it almost feels like the Me Too movement and whatever the Nickelodeon move, like it's basically child actor version of Me Too, which gives it a much creepier, less commercial friendly aspect to it. Right. You can't make easy Lifetime movies and adaptations as much as the kid stuff. But these two things almost feel like they're the same Me Too kind of thing, where you're put in these positions where you're around people that have incredible power. They can make or break you. Like they could make you into a millionaire by just saying like, Hey, look at Maverick Approach, like go buy his stuff right now. If they just did that, it would change the whole world for you. Right. And that's not going to go away. So then it's like, what kind of favors, what would you be willing to do for me to just throw that bone out to you? And I don't know. Do you think that's gone? Do you think we got it wrapped up because Brian Peck and Dan Schneider and Harvey Weinstein are gone?
Well, for one, the Harvey Weinstein case just got overturned.
Yeah.
So now
I'm sure they know what they're doing. I mean, I trust the legal system.
Yeah, right. I mean, I feel like, you know, now we're going backwards, right? So it's like we caught this guy, did all this stuff, made this whole big spectacle out of it. Now we're just reversing it. So it's kind of like we're undoing everything that was already done. So like, are we moving forward or are we going backwards? Are we just kind of just putting a pacifier? Because I feel like it's still going on, and I feel like it's going to continue to go on until we like really start to take down like more pillars that kind of hold this whole thing up.
If I were to remove all the sarcasm that's in my body to kind of convey what I really think, I'd think that it was always going to be overturned. They were always going to get Weinstein out of this. Like they figure out kind of like that big cathartic release. It's the same concept if a newspaper puts on the front page and big headlines, you know, Maverick Approach, you know, caught robbing bank or whatever, and they've got your mugshot, and it's like, that's just going to be etched into people's mind, especially everyone that's ever known you personally. They'll be like, yo, that's, remember that time that, you know, and man, even geez. After they realize, oh, they used the wrong name and they got the wrong person, and they'll issue a correction on like, you know, the back of page 12 somewhere, like a couple weeks later, it's like, oops, we made a boo-boo. We used the wrong name. And you can take it farther than that. But for the purpose of this example, that's a common tactic where a newspaper might know that what they're going to publish on the front page is completely false, knowing that they can claim ignorance and then change it later, because that headline is the thing that people remember, the same way that people remember the year-long Me Too movement and all the different people coming out about Weinstein and the fact that he went through the trial and it was very public and he might die in jail. You know, he's not used to not having his like constant luxuries, and he might die from it. And now that it gets overturned, it's like everyone got to live, like they got to get all those toxins out of their system. They've already worked it out. So a lot of people, if you're like, let's get back onto the streets, let's get Weinstein back in there, it's like, I already saw that one. You know, I tried that one. I'm not interested in this anymore.
True. So that kind of softens the blow now. Like, okay, he suffered enough. So like, let's give him a pass.
We've done the Me Too. Like, what's the next hashtag? Like, well, I'm ready for the next one. When really Me Too could be just a permanent thing. They just always exist for the rest of our lives. And I don't think they're going to run out of creeps that could keep getting caught under it, you know?
Right. Exactly. So yeah, that's kind of their trick bag to where it's like, oh yeah, you know, wrong guy, or, you know, he suffered enough. So let's go ahead and move on to the next, like you said, hashtag or movement. So it's almost counterproductive with these movements, because like they'll go so hard in one direction and then they'll move on to something else. And now it's like, if it, something that does get overturned like this, it kind of softens the blow. And it's kind of like, there's no outrage. There's no, like, no recourse. Like, oh, okay, well, he's just floating around now.
There's a, I think me and you are roughly the same age, so we probably saw some of the same kind of Nickelodeon programming growing up. And I think the Amanda Bynes show, which is what took a lot of priority in that first documentary series. But that was like almost at the tail end of when I kind of stopped watching Nickelodeon. Like I definitely watched too. All that. And I watched SNICK and I watched everything before that religiously.
Same.
So, and the creepiest one of that, because like it sucks what happened to Amanda Bynes, and it would make, like, I don't know if I would rewatch all that now, like as a 40-year-old the same way, but right. I would watch the hell out of like some Hey Arnold and some Doug and Rugrats. And one of them is like Ren and Stimpy, and the original creator Ren and Stimpy had a very similar sort of bad story. Like he got exposed for grooming underage people. And then like, but now that's one of the series that I actually am like, man, I still like Ren and Stimpy, even knowing everything that I hate about like the creator and the weird sick mind behind it. Like, and now it makes sense why all, like, so many of the skits were like kind of on the border of,
they were
gross,
right? But
I don't know if I can force myself to hate it just because of the guy behind it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you feel that, like if you found out, I mean I don't know if anyone loves P. Diddy, let's say like you loved a certain P. Diddy song, and then all this stuff comes out, do you unlike it? Do you just like every time you hear it, not makes you sick? Or
yeah, it's tough, man. It's tough because, again, like I said, like you have all these fond memories attached to all these shows and music and all this other stuff. So it's like, if you do have fond memories, like, do you erase those memories, or do you discount those now because of this? I would say no, only because it's coming from a pure place on your end. And you're not, you know, subscribing to whatever they were trying to convey anyways. But you do have to go into it knowing like, okay, well, I'm not going to, you know, fill my whole existence with that. But like, oh, yeah, you know, I remember when I was watching Ren and Stimpy or all that. And, you know, I remember where I was at that time. And you kind of keep it there. You know, you don't have to go any further than that because, you know, there was a lot of symbolism and a lot of stuff that were projecting into those shows and music and everything else. But I don't know, I would kind of keep it surface, and you don't have to discount it all the way. But now you do know, I wouldn't like, you know, play it for my nieces or nephews, or, you know, kind of like anything like that, to where I'm like sharing it and like helping it promote it even more. So you're gonna, you kind of just leave it where it is and kind of leave it like that. But yeah, knowing that they pretty much had a whole agenda behind all that stuff, like even with the like Nickelodeon foot logo, like that whole thing, like Dan Schneider had a foot fetish. So you're seeing all these things, you're like, ah, man, like that sucks. So it's kind of like, you know, again, just leaving it there and not really taking it any further, to be honest.
Well, so that's a really good segue too, to like get a little bit more esoteric and conspiracy minded on this, because the documentary and the Dan Schneider claims and Brian Peck, like all that stuff is very much in the mundane world. But like these are court documents, these are recorded, you know, sort of recountings of things that have happened. And none of it gets into like the conspiracy, esoteric, insider stuff. It's all just like a bunch of creeps doing creepy stuff. But then you got this extra layer, especially in the world that me and you kind of operate in, where it's like, yeah, but did you see the footprint logo? And did you see the splat that might look like, you know, Epstein's Island? And did you see the all-seeing eye Nickelodeon logo and all this, which almost implies that it's not just Dan Schneider or these other guys just being creeps within their own little creep bubbles, but that there's like another layer above that. Like there's an actual Illuminati pyramid at some point.
Oh, 100%.
All these guys getting caught are just one of those rings. And like, how much do you believe that's going on in the specific context of like Nickelodeon and all those shows? Do you think that there was like people orchestrating it?
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's so many different signs and so many different things that you look into for it not to be, right? So like when you look into Disney and Nickelodeon and like all these like double entendre, sexual innuendo type of things, and being an adult, seeing that and having discernment, you're like, this is definitely something else, right? So like, I feel like those people who got caught were like a lower tier and they kind of let them have their free reign and whatnot. But that other layer of what you're talking about, they definitely have an agenda and they definitely have things like there's so many different symbols, like where Disney, like you look at, you know, there's one Disney picture of Mickey and Minnie, and Mickey's holding Minnie and it looks like actually like a penis. And like the body and everything else, there's hidden penises everywhere, and like Little Mermaid and all these different things. You're like, that is definitely done on purpose and they're trying to convey something subconsciously. So I feel like that other layer is definitely there, because how you said with the Epstein Island thing, like the Splat logo is literally the cutout of Epstein's Island. And if you look at SpongeBob's ID.
Don't ruin SpongeBob. Please don't ruin SpongeBob.
SpongeBob's ID is 124 Conch. I think it's Conch Street or whatever else. Mm-hmm. That address is actually on Epstein's Island.
No.
So if you type in that address.
Oh, man. What are they using that SpongeBob sponge for, man? I don't even want to think about that now.
Yeah. So if you type in his address, it's actually an address that goes to Epstein's Island. And there's so many articles trying to debunk it, but all you have to do is just go look at it. You type in 124 Conch, I think it's Street or whatever it is, and there's an actual location on the island of St. James.
Man, maybe I'm going to have to work on an animation at some point that just like SpongeBob goes home after a long day, but it's like to Epstein Island or something. Just to counteract trying to scrape it off the internet. Like, now here's some content that directly links these two things together that they don't necessarily have control over. So
yeah,
you said something that I 100% agree with, that the Schneiders and the Weinsteins and the Pecks, they're kind of like these lower rung people that are able to be the sacrificial lambs. Like, you rarely do you offer the king as a sacrificial lamb, and never the king makers, you know what I mean? Like, that's why they're the king makers, so that they can at least make the most powerful person on like this superficial level, the exoteric, so that if you were ever to sacrifice them in public, that's when everyone's like, oh, well, the problem's gone, you know. And that was kind of Weinstein. But now I'm just thinking, like, what if Weinstein's not the top of that rung and whatever that stuff that he does, and he's the rumors, I guess, all allegedly, because apparently it was overturned. So now are we allowed to say so? Allegedly, he was just sleeping with like all of the top actresses, musicians, just anyone that was anyone that wanted to make a really big name for themselves. I guess there was this rumor that if you just went and banged Weinstein, you would just kind of get like the VIP access to, you know, make yourself out of something bigger. But if he's doing that with all of the biggest celebrities that we can think of, like, who's above Weinstein and what are they doing to celebrities? Or like, what is that next rung? And I guess this is where it's all just speculation, because I don't even know what Weinstein's daily schedule might look like. It's probably so far out of reality for me. And then imagine the person that's like rungs above him.
Right. So,
yeah. Have anyone ever mentioned like who might have been above Schneider or who might be above Weinstein? Like, who do you think is at the top of that pyramid?
To be honest, we'll never know their names. It's kind of like the banking industry. It's kind of like any other industry, to where like who's really pulling the strings. We'll never really know their names, right? Because that's where they hold their power. And if they're in the limelight, then that makes them a target. They can easily be taken down. But these people who are running these companies, you know, whether it be TV, movies, music, anything at that level, financial, we'll never know who they are because they allow it like that. They put people in front of them to, like you said, be sacrificial lambs. If something were to go wrong, they make all these pieces on the board, make them look like kings, but they're really pawns and they're all disposable. So, I mean, if I was playing it that way, I would do the same. I would put all these people in front of me, give them the power and, you know, all the money and fame and all that stuff. Go ahead, you know, push them out, whatever. Meanwhile, I'm calling the shots behind closed doors and nobody really knows who I am. That's where the real power is. So I think that we'll never really know who they are. And I've seen, you know, and heard things in Hollywood to where, you know, certain people are running things, but there's always somebody else behind them, you know? So I think that we'll never really know.
I mean, have you ever considered who might, like, what group of people is that, like, the very top? Like, you've got Freemasons, you've got reptilians, you've got, you know, like, I don't know, like aristocracy, you've got interdimensional beings. Some people just say it's just like Satan at the top because we're in the earthly plane and he's the controller of everything. Like, do you have, like, is there any thread that you've pulled apart where you're like, I think it might be more this than that?
To be honest, I mean, I have a few theories. I mean, I feel like for one, if it is something like otherworldly, it's something that was already here. And, you know, like you said, with the reptilians, like there's been a lot of cases to where people are saying like, oh, they're in control and they're using us for pretty much as like a food source and a battery source. And they're letting us kind of, you know, do our thing and run our society so they can, you know, feed off of us. If it is something else that, you know, isn't like human or, you know, whatever the case may be, I feel like it could be, you know, something like that, whether it be some type of interdimensional beings or alien race. I feel like that's one theory. The other theory is that, and I posted this on my ex account, there's a pyramid that goes so far up. It's so layered. It's crazy. It goes from, you know, government to, you know, secret societies, then above that, then you have like the Vatican, then you have above that, then you get into like the interdimensional beings and all that stuff, the angelic realm, all these different things. And it's a crazy layout. So I posted it a long time ago. I'll probably repost it, but it makes sense because there's different layers to where how everything is kind of ran. Right. So like once you think you hit the top, like, oh, government, you think the government's the top. No, it goes beyond that. Then it goes into family bloodlines. Then it goes into, you know, it keeps going up like that. So I think that if we are dealing with anything like that, then I think it's something to where it's older than, you know, the countries itself. It's older than anything we kind of know, like family bloodlines or, you know, secret societies, things of that nature. But I definitely think there's definitely some kind of like other beings that are kind of involved some way, shape or form that's outside of government and everything else.
How does AI fit into this? Do you think that they're related at all to what you would consider like these other beings that are outside of us?
I think AI has already been here. I think it's ancient tech that we're discovering. It's something that we haven't created. So I feel like that all the things that we're kind of using now, all this technology and, you know, we're creating, it's more of a discovery. It's like something that's already been here and we're kind of rediscovering all these different things. So it could be a form of, I heard a good, you know, theory the other day to where AI is not so much a technology, but it is a possibility from another like fourth or fifth realm, right? Because AI kind of creates pictures and music and whatever kind of thing you want. So it's possibilities of what could be. So I feel like those could be pulling from other parallel dimensions or whatnot, because we're kind of creating, like, where does this come from? Think about it. You type in AI, like, hey, show me a car driving down a street at night with, you know, fireworks going off, and it paints you a picture vividly. It's like, where is that created from? Where is that pulling from? And you could say, like, oh, it could be from the internet, and it's a collection of data and whatnot, but it doesn't exist anywhere, right? So you're creating something that doesn't exist. So I feel like it could be pulling something from other possibilities or other, you know, realms and whatnot. But I feel like AI was probably already here, and it's like some type of ancient technology that we've are just rediscovering.
That's an interesting it makes me wonder now, and I guess I'll pose it as a question. Is there anything that humans have created themselves that wasn't just the discovery of something that already existed?
I feel like a lot of things, to be honest. I feel like a lot of the technology, I feel like even blockchain itself, it's not something that we created. So all these different things that we're kind of discovering, I feel like all these ideas and everything else, nothing kind of is like new under the sun. I feel like pretty much everything, because even if you go back to the 1800s of like the late 1800s of there was a world fair. And if you look at the world fair of all these pictures of like Chicago and San Francisco, it looks like these crazy structures that couldn't be built by just, you know, hands and bricks and, you know, the primitive stuff that they had, right? But if you look into like the early 1900s, it looks nothing like that. So I feel like they kind of got rid of all those like amazing structures because they wanted us to forget on, you know, kind of the civilization that we had before. So if you look at the World Fair, like 1850s, 1860s, they had these amazing structures that look like it came from like another world, like another civilization. And like these structures were made just for the World Fair, so they say. But I feel like they probably either deconstructed them or burnt them so that we can forget pretty much where we came from and what we've had before. Like if you even look into some of the technology, like over 100 years ago, like FaceTime technology has been around for like 100 years. Like if you look at Germany, they had the first video phone call in 1935, 1938, around there. They did that in the 1930s. They had it was very like low pixelated, but still they had it. So it was like a FaceTime call. And this is, you're thinking like, wait a minute, they had this 100 years ago. Same thing like with, you know, AT&T, when they came out with their phone, it was a video conference phone in 1971. They had a video phone call. It was with, I believe it was a mayor and another guy, and they were just testing it out. All these different things that we think that is like new technology. It's like, no, we really had this a long time ago.
That's a great point, especially like the early video and telephone and stuff. I think a lot of it was just, it was clunky and only accessible to like the highest of the elites. And it takes a really long time. And this is like me speculating, but part of it is it takes a while to make it reproducible, that you can sell it at a profit to any people. But then there's probably also the speculative aspect of like, how long do we want this just to ourselves? Like, do we want everyone to be able to just do video chat? Do we want everyone to be able to do blockchain and AI? Or do we want to keep it for ourselves until the very last moment when we know that we just can't keep it in the bag anymore, and then just kind of like let it out, like, oh wow, look at this new thing that we're all discovering for the first time together. The thing about the world fairs, because it's one of my favorite topics to get into, and it usually comes up in relation to like Tartaria. Are you familiar with like all the Tartarian theories?
Yeah.
So the official company line, just so that we can put it out there and poke at it, is that those old structures that looked like super impressive and then were gone, is that they made them out of plaster of Paris. They made these big molds and then poured plaster of Paris into it so that they didn't have to have like full construction teams. All they had to do was have someone that knew how to pour plaster and then stack it up, and it only had to last long enough for the fair to be in town, and then they can knock it back down. That's the official company line. And then the specific conspiratorial line is that no, those structures were actually there prior to the World Fair. And when they claim to be like breaking it down to move on or whatever, that's when they say, oh, that's plaster of Paris. Don't mind that we're smashing all this up and you're never going to see it again.
Right.
So if we were to assume that the structures were actually there to begin with, that actually means that the new world wasn't the new world. It was the old world. And now it calls into question, like, even the discovery of America and who was here first. And like, do you have any theories on, like, was America ever discovered, or do you just think it was always somewhat like of an advanced state?
Definitely. It was definitely rediscovered, because, you know, there was people long before here. I feel like the civilization here, like you said, it's pretty much like the old America or the old world. Because even if you look at the Grand Canyon, like, there's places in the Grand Canyon that you can't go to. And the theory is that there's a portal in the Grand Canyon that actually goes to Egypt. And they're saying that Egypt is really in America, because there were structures, there's pyramids in America. There's tons of pyramids all around America. There's pyramids in, like, you know, St. Louis and all these other places. So you got to look at kind of these clues and you're like, wait a minute, there's, you know, pyramids here and there's structures in the Grand Canyon that look like actual, you know, the monuments in Egypt. It's like, what was really going on here? So I feel like America, you know, was the original Egypt. And I feel like, you know, they're hiding all this hidden history, because, you know, like, going to the Grand Canyon, you can't even go to certain parts because NASA owns it. And you can't even go there. And there's certain parts that's just locked off. So it's like, what are they hiding? Why is that so important? What are they trying to hide, as far as, you know, it's like all these different things. So I feel like definitely this was probably the new old world, if anything.
Man, I'm geeking out a little bit, because, like, there's a lot of precedent for this that I love getting. Like, so one of the examples of America actually being ancient Egypt, and I haven't heard about the portal and the Grand Canyon theory. I'm gonna have to look that up, because I'm on board with this for a few different reasons. One of them is the only or the first original American religion that came from European Americans and not Native Americans was Mormonism. And Mormonism exploded, and Mormonism also leverages so much like ancient Egyptian references to cities, to structures. Even the original gold plates were apparently supposed to be written in like hieroglyphics. So there's precedent within the Mormon religion that they kind of looked at the United States as like this analog to ancient Egypt, or maybe the actual ancient Egypt. And there's also not just Nation of Islam, which does some of this, except they do it with like the Middle East as opposed to Egypt in particular. But they'll say, like, you know, Medina, and they'll say like New Jerusalem and things like this. And then you've got the Nation of Gods and Earths and Five Percenters, which take that to like another extra level and actually say, no, it was like the real place was here in America. And my bias a little bit on the table, like, I'm kind of like pro America, not in like I'm going to go in and like fight and, you know, over someone in a bar because I think America's the greatest country. But right. I kind of like, I like my programming a little bit. Like, I like the Nicktoons that we grow up in and stuff. And like, America, I think, has a really impressive culture. Like, I love our culture, even if it's garbage. Like, I still like it a lot. And that's because of my programming. Right. But because of that, I'm endlessly fascinated with like this concept that some of the earliest Americans that were developing new religions based on these new surroundings kept saying like, this is actually the real original Egypt or the real original Middle East, whatever. So this theory of that America was Egypt, it fascinates me because it plays into that. But now the link that there's an actual portal. So if you went from the Grand Canyon into this portal and we pop out in like the actual Egypt and Africa we're talking about, do you think that they were, are they actually two things, or was it always just one, like was Egypt always just one thing and people just never considered the portal aspect?
I feel like it was probably all one thing. And I feel like how they were saying, like, you know, the Nile was actually the Mississippi River. So all these different things. So we're like, I feel like it was maybe some type of pre-establishment. And, you know, it was like an extension to where, you know, you can go back and forth and whatnot. So I think it was probably just all one thing. And, you know, even looking at our money, like, why is there a pyramid on, you know, back of our dollar? So you kind of look at the clues and you're like, okay, that makes sense. Like you start to really put the pieces together, like, okay, the pyramids and whatnot. So what are we really looking at? So I feel like it was pretty much all one thing. And I feel like, you know, whatever kind of means of transportation they had, it's kind of like that movie Stargate. I don't know if you remember that movie, but I feel like that's rooted in, and that's with the, another thing too. They always use the movies, and I feel like that they're trying to always convey messages subconsciously through, you know, media and entertainment. So I feel like that was probably some type of Stargate to where they can, you know, move between the two countries and whatnot. So I think, it's probably all one thing, to be honest, because it's there's too many weird clues to ignore at this point.
Do you think it's like Hollywood in general and TV and movies, like the soft disclosure and predictive programming or whatever what name you want to give it? Do you think that there's a good version of that? Like not in theory, but in actual real world practice right now in 2024, do you think there's like a good media company that isn't just trying to push like some horrible, you know, ultimate agenda or unknowingly so?
Yeah, I think so. I think everything is dark and light, right? Okay. This is how the elites operate, right? Nothing can just be dark or light. It has to have duality. This is why they use the colors black and white, the checkerboard floors. Everything is in the balance of the universe when it comes to dark and light, or good and bad. So I think there is, you know, either some type of where they allow, you know, certain movies and media companies to, you know, put out, you know, certain things that can educate us or enlighten us, only because that's how the balance of the universe works. You can't always just be bad or always just be good, right? So this is how their magic works. So I feel like there is, you know, some legit companies out there that are trying to help us and enlighten us and whatnot. But they also, you know, they have to put out, even when we're not really paying attention, subconsciously, they have to tell us kind of what they're doing and what they're up to and, you know, different symbols and whatnot. So I think that, you know, it's all connected. It's all dark and light.
If you're talking with someone and for the first time and you're realizing you're kind of on the same page and the other person's like, yeah, man, the Illuminati runs the world. Like, what comes to mind for you when someone says that phrase? Cause it can mean so many things. Like, is it a group of, like, who is that group of Illuminati when you envision it?
Good question. I feel like it's layered, right? So like how we were just saying the pyramid, I feel like the Illuminati is probably a group of people that are enlightened, right? Whether it be knowledge of, you know, whatever the case may be, they know more than the average bear. But I feel like they aren't the end all. I feel like, you know, there's always a higher rung than that. But, you know, when you say people are, you know, these people are running the world, the Illuminati running the world, to a certain degree, yes. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, we come from source. So at the end of the day, we kind of dictate and kind of create our own reality, whether we want to, you know, go with the program or not. And I think that ultimately collective conscious runs everything when it comes at, you know, at the end of the day, because like you can only allow something if you allow it. Right. You know, if you give somebody hand over, you know, the keys to your car, then they get to drive it. But you allowed that. Right. So you can only have things, you know, come into your life if you allow it. So you can never be forced. And that's the beauty of free will. You can never be forced to do something. You can do whatever you want. And I feel like, you know, even they know that. So this is why they try to influence us all the time with, you know, numbers and symbols and music and, you know, all these imageries with movies and all this other stuff, because they're trying to influence us to do something because they know they just can't force our hand. So having discernment and doing otherwise, that's kind of, you know, you kind of are the creator and the master of your own domain.
That's another really good point you bring up, is that it's almost like this, you didn't say this phrase, I'll say the phrase, but it's almost like the culture war seems like it's more impactful than any other kind of war that we could be in, because what a culture war could do is shape that collective sentiment about anything, like just like a global concept of something, because that's what could change rules across the planet. If everyone just automatically was like, you know what, I hate oranges, and everyone was just like, yeah, I hate oranges too, and people just demanded that you also hate oranges, if that got enough of a sweeping effect, then governments might ban it. You'd see it like outside.
Yeah, let's all ban oranges. Like, let's get rid of oranges. And then like,
you know, I'm trying to keep it tame, because a lot of things that we could say in place of oranges, but like you could ban a certain thing, but only if you get a whole bunch of people on board or make it acceptable. You know, now all of a sudden it's acceptable to just punch someone in the face if they disagree with you. That right now it's not acceptable because the general sentiment, but there's been plenty of times in our history, even in this country, when like that was acceptable. Like there was probably a rule on the books that was like, hey, if somebody insults your woman, like you can punch them in the face and break their nose potentially. Collectively, we changed that.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Wild West, right? Where you could just, everybody can carry a gun. And if you had a problem with somebody, all right, you take it outside and you duel it out. And, you know, you shoot me or I shoot you. That was kind of... That was law. It's kind of like, okay, that's how things are settled. And that was, you know, everybody agrees. Everybody, this is how we're going to do things. It was normal, right? Now you just can't do that, just going around shooting people, obviously. But it's kind of like, what is normal, right? Like, what do we make normal? What do we deem normal? Do we keep moving the goalposts? And that's this whole thing, too, where, you know, with gender and everything else, it's causing confusion. Now that's normal, and that's another layer of confusion. What they're trying to do, they're trying to confuse the younger generation. Like, oh, are you a boy? You're a girl? Are you a cat? An alien? I don't know. It's like, where? How is this normal now? Like, where? Like, how far are we going to push? You know, normal, right? So, like, nothing is really normal at the end of the day. It's like what we deem to be normal,
and there's one thing that, I mean, I'll say whatever the organization is behind like MK Ultra and mind control and just pushing humans to their absolute limits, just to paint with the broadest stroke I can to the point of maybe like oversimplifying, but Americans and Germans and like Swiss and, you know, Europeans and Americans in particular, anyone that was really big into eugenics, they tend to cross over really big into like this mind control and shaping public culture and like all the culture wars, because I think that it centers around figuring out what traumatizes people or figuring out where the ends of the extreme are. Like when at your worst moment of, you know, terror or fear, that's one aspect of MK Ultra. Other ones are, can we influence you when you're under some kind of like a psychedelic effect or like you're feeling disassociated from yourself? These are completely different aspects, but it all represents these extremes of like the human condition. And for the longest time, 1900s, 30s, 50s forward, a lot of that, it was on like unwitting civilians, but it was typically on like adults and whatnot. Well, and I mean, arguably, some of the MK Ultra programs definitely did not restrict themselves to any group of ages. But now it's almost like the most other extreme that's unexplored is what happens to like teenagers. Like it's like the one of the most petulant sort of like moments, at least in my life, that you're going through puberty. You're trying to like figure out your place in the world. Are you even real? Like, am I a brand of that? Are my friends? Like things are just changing every single day. And that almost feels like this unexplored, like constant source of trauma. Like there's always going to be 10 to 13 year old angsty kids that are going through changes and are unsure of themselves and the world around them. And why not harness that? Why not use that? And I'm saying from the concept of the Illuminati right now, not from me.
Right. No, like, no. Yeah.
Why not see that and be like, man, that is another version of this like extreme of the human condition. Why don't we start poking and prodding at that and see what comes out of it? Because we might find some new things that unlock. And if I could just instill certain ideas or certain programming in these very specific years of mental development, like that, just planting the seed can change what that public concept and like what these universally agreed upon illusions are for like the following generations.
Yeah, it's kind of like creating a reality, right? So it's like you said, you're pushing the boundaries and pushing the mind to deem what's normal, or kind of like, you know, use these formative years to, you know, kind of manipulate and influence whatever you want. So you can create a reality on, you know, these younger minds towards like, oh, okay, well, this is normal and this is how we're going to conduct ourselves in society. So it's really like a form of magic. It's like what's his name from Marvel? Mysterio. Dr. Strange, Mysterio. Well,
that's kind of like the good and the bad version.
Yeah, exactly.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
But it's like you're creating a reality where it's like it's not true, right? But you think it's reality, and it's like a form of magic. So like you said, like they can use those formative years, and you know, when you're growing up and going through puberty and all this other stuff, let's push the line and throw this idea in there and throw that. It's kind of like an experiment. And then what comes out is like, okay, well, now we can kind of control the narrative of whatever agenda we want to do.
So we were talking earlier too about like crypto and the project that you had going on. And I've got mixed feelings on crypto in general. Like I'm pro crypto because it's an alternative that didn't exist, and it clearly has an objective value right now. Like you can go and buy stuff right now. It's worth money up and down, and it's been increasing in value almost like exponentially if you look at the right, you know, scale of it. But do you think that crypto as a whole is like a net positive? Do you think that it's truly like a grassroots, organic, open source kind of operation? Or is there a chance that all cryptocurrency is just an NSA project and everyone's buying into it and helping them train it?
Well, I do have two kind of like stances on that. So for one, I do think the government created Bitcoin. There's a lot of evidence. It goes with, you know, a lot of things. And if you look at the timeline of it, it's a little too perfect, because when Bitcoin was created, it was created right after the 08 crash. And it was a form of currency to have a hedge against inflation, hedge against crashes and whatnot. The code itself, SHA-256, was created by the NSA, yes, which, you know, could be somebody from the NSA or somebody from the government who kind of like went rogue and kind of created it themselves. We don't know. But I would say the timing of it, and being that we're under a massive financial situation that nobody is really understanding, I think that the biggest crash of human history is about to happen. And they know that. And that's why they created Bitcoin. But being that the technology is so widely accepted now, it's not a US thing. It's a global thing. And I feel like there are other protocols out there that could save you from poverty or could completely opt you out of this whole centralized banking system. And now it's finding those projects and getting into certain things and doing your research and finding out what works and what is legit for you and you know, what is kind of made by a bigger entity. So I think, again, it goes back to duality, the dark and light. They have to give us a fighting chance, right? They can't just create something and then just dominate us and then that's it. No more of free will, what we want to do with our money. So I feel like blockchain is the same thing. I feel like if Bitcoin was created by the government, they're using it as a one world currency. It'll be based off of everything else will be based off of Bitcoin, not the dollar anymore. And that's how they're going to operate. But I feel like there are other great protocols out there. That's for privacy. That's for, you know, decentralized banking, decentralized finance, to where you can opt out of the system and find your way. But I feel like this is the ground floor, and I feel like this is the most important time now to get into it. And while it's still being figured out and regulated, and each day the door is inching closer to being closed. So I feel like it's both, to be honest. I feel like, yeah, it is a controlled thing, but it's also outside the realm of what we're normally used to and using. And that's our fighting chance to be, you know, to bank the unbanked, to create your own, be your own bank and create your own source of income out of it if you use it correctly.
There's and you're not on the hook here to defend all of cryptocurrency. All right. I want to be clear on that, because that's an unfair position for anyone to ever find themselves in. I guess a broad concern about crypto in general, no specific coin platform. We could be talking ERC-20 tokens. We can be talking Bitcoin, anything at all. But it seems that in a suspicious way, in my my paranoid American eye, it's almost like, okay, great. This is this new alternative. It's going to, at some point, theoretically hold value better than fiat currency. Why does every one of these cryptocurrencies all seem to still operate on the exact same playbook of like candlesticks and bear markets and bull markets and get in early? And in particular, like if you've got some hot tip, like, keep it to yourself. Don't give it to everyone else. Because if the real promise of some of these decentralized cryptos, if it was really like we can have finally a stable currency and one that has real value and not just kind of fiat to the whims of the market and people that control the market. But if that were the case, why would it be acting and walking and talking just like a duck? It's just like a digital duck now. And it almost feels like a trap. Like it's just the same thing that we got, but now like you can't put it in your wallet anymore, or if your battery dies, or if you get rained on or you fall into the ocean, like oops, maybe all your Bitcoin's gone now, when in reality they're like other regular currencies. So that's like an extreme paranoia that I've got for it, though, where it's like, why are we still doing candlestick patterns? Why are people still buying low, selling high, if it's following the exact same trends as every other kind of currency in a market? At what point does it stand out and say, okay, now I'm like the good version of all this? Like, what's the feature that it has?
I feel like we're still years away from that. So I feel like any kind of new industry has to have cycles, has to go up and down. to find its legs, right? So when it comes to like regulation, when it comes to being, you know, accepted as legal tender, like it is in some countries right now, I feel like we're going, it's growing pains right now. And I feel like there's a lot of, sorry, there's a cop behind me.
Are you going to pull over? Or are you just going to keep driving?
I'm not driving. But yeah, I feel like,
no, I'm just kidding.
I feel like it has to have its, it has to find its legs, and in going through regulation, growing pains, it's going to be some time before we get there and be like, okay, this is the, you know, new currency and it's stable. It's very much trusted. It's accessible. We're still years away from that. So I feel like right now, yes, we're going off of, you know, candlesticks and, you know, buy low, sell high type of situation. But then it'll get to a point to where it's in our everyday life, and it's in our lives to where we're not worried about more so the value versus the utility. And that's where we get into the real world value behind it, to where we're using it for our banking or settling, you know, transactions, you know, representing real world assets on the blockchain. Then we'll get to a place where it's a lot larger, a lot more safe, and we'll weed out kind of that, you know, early days of chasing candles and whatnot. So that, cause that's where we are right now, but it's just growing pains and we've got to go through cycles.
Do you, the hypothetical, but I'm just imagine like you got a Mennonite community or like a big Amish community or something. Do you think that they just stay insulated from crypto forever? Because the moment you go and interact with them and you want to buy a quilt or have them raise a barn, like now it's the onus is on you to figure out how to take your digital currency and convert it into something that they want to use.
I feel like, to be honest, even if it's like an Amish community or something, so somebody like is just so isolated, I feel like even those societies are going to have to cease to exist or deal with something on some type of form of blockchain, because everything can be represented on the blockchain, whether it be real estate, stocks, you name it, you know, a cow, you know, your butter churner, whatever it is. I feel like it'll get to the point to where it's in the very fabric of our society. And, you know, we've seen it happen before, if you look in the 80s and 90s, people were like, why do we need an email? I can just write a letter. Or why do you guys text message? What is that for? I can just call you. But now it's like a way of life, right? It's deeming, again, how we said, what's normal, right? So when we're going from, you know, analog to digital, what's normal? How do we interact with blockchain? How do we interact with these digital assets? You know, 50 years from now, it's just going to be normal. It's going to be like, oh yeah, of course my car is on a blockchain. I can sell it and go to peer-to-peer. Like, how else do we do it? How did you guys do it back in the day? So it's kind of like, what are we deeming normal at that point?
So I'm going to assume that you probably have a little bit more insight as to like the practical workings of how crypto, because you've got your own platform and you've actually launched a whole thing, and I'm going to ask you about that in particular in a second. But here's another paranoid thought that I've got that I feel like applies to all ledger style crypto, which I think is usually when you say ledger, it's like all cryptos I think operate on that, but in case they don't, let's just say all ledger based. So one of the paranoias is that right now, if I were to send you a dollar, like I could in theory trace that dollar forever. Like I can follow it through the system and who you transfer it to and who they transfer it to. If I had enough time and gumption, like that's a very real thing that you could do that does not exist right now. If I gave you a dollar, even if I wrote the serial number down, like the second that it's in your pocket, I have no idea what happens to it. So first of all, is that accurate? Like, could I give you a dollar now in crypto and then in 20 years, like find everywhere that dollar has ever gone? Or is that not necessarily something that you can do?
It'd be really hard to, only because if you were to send me a dollar and then I turn around and go take that dollar and bunch it with 99 other dollars. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you even differentiate, or how do you even know it's that same dollar, right? Essentially, you trace transactions, but you can't trace the actual digital representation of that
dollar. Fair point. Well, let's say that you've never, like, I sent the dollar to your wallet that you made just to receive my dollar, and you only ever use that wallet to send that dollar to someone else. And let's just say that for the purpose of an argument, it only goes to other people's wallet that only has that dollar. In that particular scenario, could I follow that dollar indefinitely throughout all of crypto history?
Yeah, for sure you can. That's the transparency of blockchain, unless you're using some type of privacy protocol like Monero. They outlawed these, but I mean, in America, but they even have these things to where they have like Tornado Cash, like where you can mix up your transaction with 1,000 other transactions and then it spits it out to where you don't know what transaction went where. It's kind of like a mixed bag of nuts, right? So they have all
these risky.
Yeah. But what it does is it's for privacy, and it's like it throws you off the path and the trail goes cold.
So it's like connecting to the internet through like 20 different VPNs or something.
Exactly. So you have those types of protocols, and you have privacy protocols to where, you know, if you want to, you know, not really track your transactions, then they have different things like that. So, but in theory, yeah, you could.
I honestly don't know the answer to any of these crypto questions that I'm asking you. Is like, how does Monero work in hiding your privacy? Is it like we promise not to let anyone look into this, or is it truly secure that I could never trace that dollar?
Yeah, it's pretty much where I don't use Monero. I just know their protocol. Mm-hmm. But I just know that, you know, when it comes to encryption, security, anything that could be, you know, exposed, or anything that's some type of security issue, that's what it's used for. It's for privacy and security. So I'm pretty sure that, you know, they're doing what they're saying they're doing. And you can always look at their code as well. That's another thing about, you know, blockchain and smart contracts. You can, you know, audit codes and see if they're doing exactly what they're supposed to be doing.
And then, explain a little bit what your platform is and how yours operates, and like why you made it, how you made it.
So my platform, JetSet Lux, is essentially Airbnb on blockchain. It's a lot more than that, but I just simplify it for people so they can get it. But essentially, you'll be able to go on the platform, book your stay with different, you know, locations and whatnot. But not only like overnight stays, you'll be able to use it for, you know, productions. You'll be able to use it for events. And then also we have custom curated packages to where you're not going to 5 different places trying to book your trip. It's all in one, right? You have a chef, a driver, your flight, all these different things that we kind of curate and have like a white glove experience for that customer. And it just elevates the experience. So that's layer one of what we're doing. And then phase two is tokenization of our real estate. So we have about 50 properties across America, and then we'll be going overseas as well. You'll be able to participate and fractionalize your investment into our properties. So if you don't have, you know, $100,000 traditionally that you would need to get into real estate, you know, investing, but you have, you know, $5,000, $10,000, whatever the case may be. And we divvy up those properties to where you can get into an investment property at a low end entry point and get an ROI on it. So that's where pretty much where all of investment's going, but especially real estate investment with tokenization.
Let's say a hypothetical that might not actually make like real sense in your world, but just for, I guess, an example here, I got a mansion in the middle of Texas somewhere, you know, let's say it's like a $5 million mansion. It'd be perfect for some like high end kind of Airbnb stuff. like, and I approach you as opposed to you looking for investment. I'm just like, hey, I want to digitize my mansion. I want to turn it into blockchain and put it into your system. Like, what are the actual practical steps? Like, do they just sign over a deed to their house and you get cash out of that? Or is it like you put the house onto the blockchain and now you just start getting money every time it gets used? Like, what are the, like, where does the rubber meets the road kind of operation here?
Yeah, everything is ran by smart contracts, right? So
are ERC-20 tokens?
So ERC is actually Ethereum-based tokens. Mm-hmm. We're on Binance. And, you know, it's tomato, tomato. It's different blockchains and whatnot. But essentially what we're doing with our tokenization is that a digital representation is pretty much just ran by, you know, if you will, break it down to NFTs. It's just like a representation of whatever you're putting on that. So you write a contract saying like this deed or this house is a fractionalized investment of 40%. And, you know, whoever invests this much, they get, you know, a ROI of this whenever we hit this mark. And it's all ran by smart contracts, right? So you just write a smart contract, pretty much just what it is. It's a contract, right? So like, and it does that forever in perpetuity. Like, it's going to run, it's trustless. You don't have to worry about somebody being shady and stealing your investment. The code is written to do what it's going to do, and it's going to do it forever. So everything is ran by smart contracts. So if you did do that, we would write a smart contract to where your house is represented on the blockchain and you wanted to fractionalize your investment or whatnot. And, you know, whoever interacts with that code will get a percentage of based on these numbers. So everything is trustless and everything is ran by smart contracts. So that's the basis of it.
All right. Another hypothetical for you. That's, I guess, smart contract related. So let's say I'm the guy, I digitized my house, and ultimately, correct me if part of the simplification is way off base, but we make a smart contract that says every time this house is interacted or rented or whatever happens to it, it'll always deposit some sort of money into this wallet that I've got access to. And that's kind of the full chain. Smart contract detects something happens, deposits a little bit of cash in like a specific wallet. Is that kind of how that works?
Correct. Exactly. So it's just a set of rules that it carries out. So, and it does it, you know, day in, day out, doesn't matter, doesn't get tired. You don't need to pay it overtime, you know, benefits. It's just, it's like an employee. So you can write a smart contract to essentially do everything. Hey, pay this wallet, you know, $30 every day for the next 30 years. Okay, cool. You set it, you write it. And then from there, you just let it rip. So that's essentially how it works.
So, okay, let's say that I sell my house, I digitize it with any platform that can tokenize assets, like an NFT essentially. And we've got this smart contract. So people are renting it, it's depositing money, like the whole thing's working, but I lose my wallet. Like, I'm out on my yacht and I've got it all backed up on like one of those, you know, I guess what they call it, like a cold wallet or something, but I've got it backed up on like a little stick and it finds itself in the ocean. And now that wallet is gone forever. And that contract, every time someone rents the house, like I could sit outside front and watch people pull up and like, hey, those people are using my house. They paid money through this contract. But is there any chance that I ever get any of that money again because it's tied to this wallet that's just lost forever? Like, is there any way to correct that problem?
Yeah, well, a wallet, essentially a cold wallet, is used to store your crypto. So it doesn't have anything to do with your actual wallet as far as, you know, the smart contract tied to. So everything is,
let's say your keys to whatever, like let's say the wallet that the smart contract is connected to, the only way you get access is by knowing all the keys for it. And if at some point you lose all those keys, does that mean just forever you never get a cent from that tokenized asset, even though like technically it's yours?
Yeah, that's why they say not your keys, not your crypto. Because mm-hmm. you can pull up your wallet anywhere on earth. Like, I can smash my phone and, you know, throw it in the ocean. It doesn't matter because I can pull it up on my laptop. I can pull it up on another device, download the app again, put in my phrases. Everything's there because everything's on the blockchain. With you know, of course, a cold storage, that's pretty much just used if you have big amounts of crypto that you're storing and you don't want it on, like, you know, online. It's just stored on the blockchain, secure. As long as you have your keys, you're good. Like, yeah, keep your keys, because that's...
I guess I'm more terrified of the inverse of that. Like, imagine, what if you get hit in the head in a car accident and all of a sudden you don't remember your keys or where your keys might be? What if you're... I mean, this is going to be a very real issue in our lifetimes, right? Like, we're going to get older and someone's going to be like, Grandpa, you know, like, where's our inheritance? Where's the keys? And you're just like, oh, God, where... And you start losing your memory and maybe dementia or Alzheimer's sets in. A lot of these operations now, because we've been dealing with that particular problem for centuries, it's like, okay, well, you get power of attorney and you get lawyers involved and you get government involved and they all kind of come together and they determine, okay, you actually can speak for this person on their behalf. We can go and talk to the bank. Like, the bank can open up the little safety deposit box. Like, there's all these checks and balances. But what happens if you just forget, you just get hit in the head by a horse and you forget all your keys? Like, you could literally just go completely broke overnight with absolutely no recourse.
Yeah. And I feel like if you're at that level to where you have millions of dollars of crypto, you got to have some fail safes. Like, if you ever forget, if you lose it and you write it down and that's the only copy, I would be a lot more safer than that. I would be a lot more prepared. Because I would be paranoid to where you're like, you have like $20 million in crypto and you're just like, okay, I have it written down under my mattress and that's the only copy. I would have some fail safes in place to where, like, you know, you can store those on multiple places, have some type of other password that unlocks somewhere, or even have somebody entrusted with you, like how you said, like, if you get older, then, you know, you give it to your son or your daughter or whatever.
Not whatever your keys, not your crypto, though, right?
yeah, exactly. Got that. Yeah. And I feel like we'll get more sophisticated as time goes on. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's going to be more ways to protect your crypto, because it's pretty much inevitable. I feel like there's companies already that already help with that. But yeah, it'll definitely evolve from that.
Do you think there's... Or how much of a chance do you think that there is that developing sophistication and safeguards just puts us right back where we're at now, where you're going to 5/3 to do, you know, your withdrawals and stuff, because they're essentially your online wallet provider because they offer all of those extra value?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't let it go too far. Like, I feel like once you have institutions and everything else kind of control, you know, your crypto and whatever else, because they're already doing that now, it's kind of inevitable for some people. They're just going to, like, hand over their keys to the castle. And, you know, that's kind of what it is. But, you know, I feel like if you really are into this and you're really about kind of what it's all about, it's like self-custody, you know, being your own bank, you'll figure out ways to have some fail safes in place. But there's going to be some people that just be like, look here, hand it over. And I just want to make the money. So kind of is what it is.
Yeah. I feel like there's going to be a whole wave of new issues that no one maybe considered when it start, like the Alzheimer's and dementia things in extreme, dyslexic, like, God forbid if you have dyslexia and now you got to remember what your seed and your keys were, or just remember where it's at, you know, you're trying to put the words in. Right. But I guess, like, we'll have to run into those issues as we do. Right. I my heart goes out to all the tech illiterate, like, every, you know, every grandparent and older aunt and uncle that I ever had growing up that, like, needed the jitterbug phone and couldn't figure out how to log into their email because they only put their password in once every 2 years when they go and check it. Every 2 years. Like, I don't think that those people are ever going anywhere over the next 1,000 years. That concept of tech illiteracy. So a lot of it is almost going to be giving up agency. Like, if you're not willing to become incredibly tech literate, at least to the point where you understand how all the stuff works and, you know, keeping all your passwords to yourself and knowing how to do the seeds, if you don't take that initiative, or you're unable to because of whatever limitation, then you're kind of going to end up being this weird, like, outsider in this new digital world, which is almost like the startings of all the cyberpunk dystopian novels, right? Like, if you decide, like, no, I'm going to be Amish, that might be like the new revolution as to like, right. I don't know.
It could be.
Do you think that the cryptocurrency and like just like typical trade and barter markets can work hand in hand? Like, do you think that one of the other could disrupt the other one? Like, for example, if I just wanted to trade you my shoes and in exchange, you know, you gave me your PlayStation or something, or maybe something more practical. But do you think that like you would prefer in the future that no, just send me crypto, like go change your shoes for crypto and I'll change my PlayStation for or whatever? Or do you think that trade and barter is here to stay forever too?
Yeah, I think on some level, because of course we live in a physical world, like I don't think that will go anywhere per se when it comes to that. But I think there is going to be some type of integration. I feel like, you know, when people are going to be like, hey, just send me, you know, your shoe NFT for my PlayStation NFT or whatever. And then like,
go that, pick it up from the NFT store.
Right. Yeah.
It's kind of like exchange it for the physical one.
It's kind of like those eBay stores, right? Like, you know, where you go into the physical eBay store and like, oh, okay, we'll go pick up your stuff here, and it's already recorded and everything else. It could be that, and I think that I can definitely see that happening.
So I'm concerned, but I also live in this world, and that's the direction that we're all headed. It's going to be everything's an NFT, to oversimplify. Like everything that you own will essentially be an NFT. Yeah, I mean, what's the biggest downside? Is there anything that you're concerned about for this direction, or do you think that it's net positive?
The downside, I can see that when we have governments and other big corporations step in, they're going to kind of change what, you know, crypto and blockchain is all about. And, you know, to be fair, you know, I get it. You know, they can't conduct a way of, you know, how things are now, but I feel like the downside is they'll use it for their own selfish purposes, like a CBDC, to where it's like programmable money, to where like they'll just shut off your money and be like, okay, cool, you can only spend this amount at this time, or you can't even spend it, you know, in this area of town, to where, you know, they can even further marginalize you and keep you in a certain district or a certain town or whatnot, and hey, your money works over here, but not over here. I can see that happening, because that is all code. It's all, you know, it's digital, and essentially we're using digital dollars as is right now, right? We have Apple Pay and Zelle and Cash App and all these other things, but I think that'll be a more sophisticated way of control, to where like if they do issue out a CBDC, and you know, they can control us with programmable money, that's a downside I can see.
Yeah. Oh, so we could, I actually would love to have you back on, and we could just start talking about all the weird ways that crypto could track you and the programmable money and stuff, because a lot of this almost dovetails with things that predate crypto. And that was when everyone was concerned that we were going to get tracked through like RFID chips, and that everyone was going to have a chip, and that you try to go to a store, they would scan and know who you were and determine if you could go down certain aisles and stuff. Well, now that can happen just through your crypto wallet, where you're like, okay, here's who I am through the wallet. So anyway, we'll save that for another one, because I've got a segment that I want to do with you really quick before we tie this out. I'm just going to play the intro right now.
Hey, conspiracy buffs, I double dare you to take some PCP, the Paranormal Conspiracy Probe. On your marks, get set, and go!
Okay, you might already know the rules, but just to restate them, I'm just going to mention a topic, and you're just going to give me a 1 to 10 rating on how much you agree with that topic being valid. So we'll do a couple really easy ones to just get the hang of it. So for example, Bigfoot 1 to 10. 1 meaning you don't believe in them, 10 meaning you absolutely believe in them.
Okay.
So
let's do it. Oh, sorry, what'd you say?
Bigfoot, like what do you think on Bigfoot from 1 to 10?
Oh, Bigfoot. Okay. 1 to 10. I would say 7.
What about flat Earth?
8.
About hollow Earth?
I would say 5.
What about like 1950s, 1960s UFO stories?
Oh, 10.
What about 2024? I'll give you a specific one. Miami Mall Aliens.
I would say a 2.
What about shape-shifting reptilians on TV? You know, when people were like, hey, there's this clip and you can almost see them shift. Like, let's say the most credible one you've ever seen out of all those, 1 to 10 on that one.
I would say 7.
1 to 10 on Atlantis. You know, familiar with the concept of Atlantis?
I am. I would say 9.
What about America being Atlantis?
America being Atlantis. Interesting. I didn't think about that one. I would say I'll give that a 5.
And if you're interested in that concept, shout out. There's a Manly Palmer Hall book called American Secret Destiny, or it might be called The New Atlantis. That's the premise, is that they all knew that this was here, but it was at this Atlantean thing. Anyway, it's really interesting concept. Okay. 1 to 10 on demons, biblical demons.
10.
What about angels?
10.
What about AI being demonic?
I would say 3.
1 to 10 that me and you, or let's just say me, I'm not going to include you in this, that I could personally summon a demon in like the next 3 minutes live on a stream.
1.
Do you think anyone could? Do you think anyone could summon a demon on a live YouTube stream?
I think it requires more than that, but it could be possible.
1 to 10 that you can take a picture of a ghost.
I would say 9.
Have you ever seen ghosts?
Oh yeah, for sure. I had a lot of paranormal stuff happen to me.
Oh, let me just ask you one more and let's get a ghost story in here.
Okay.
And I think I know the answer, but I have to ask anyway. 1 to 10 that a human being has set foot on the moon in the last 100 years.
I would say 10 by now.
Really? Okay. Let me dig into that one first and then we'll get into a ghost story. Cause I think you gave a fairly high rating on flat Earth being possible. And I guess I've always considered having a moon, like a real moon, and a flat Earth were incompatible, but I guess that might not necessarily be true.
Let me tell you why that could be true.
Okay.
Flat Earth, we all know there's a firmament, right? The sun and the moon is within the firmament. So for us to say we've been to the moon, I can say if we have, because they faked the moon landing. We all know that. But being that the technology we have now, we had to have to go to the moon, and it probably wasn't publicized, but I think all that is within the firmament.
That's a fair point, man. I haven't considered that, and I agree with you. If you believe in a local sun, that's the local sun theory, is that the sun's not millions of miles away. It's like much, I don't know what the exact numbers are.
I think it's 93 million miles away, which is complete bullshit.
Right. So, and do you know what the other number is that's within the firmament? I know it's all over the place, but it's like 60,000 miles, or it's something dramatically less space than 93 million miles. So right. If that were the premise that there's a local sun and that there's a local moon, that it actually makes more sense that you could visit that local moon because it's so much closer and within the bubble of the firmament.
Right. Exactly.
That's wild, man. Never considered that. It's awesome.
And then they said that the moon is, I think, a few hundred thousand miles away. So for one, the moon was, I think, from my research, the moon was constructed and brought here from another system and brought here. It's a base.
By who?
Hollow. That I don't know. I feel like, you know, another maybe alien race or something that, you know, who we're working with. Don't know exactly, but I feel like the moon was constructed. And not only that, but it's in the firmament.
So we're going to put another pin in this one for a rain check, but I want to talk way more about the localized moon stuff. But can you leave us off with a ghost story? Because it said you've had a few paranormal encounters. Can I just get one of them?
Yeah, so I've had a few. So when I was younger, I used to have a lot of paranormal stuff happen to me. So I'll give you... this is a good one. Okay. So when I was about, I don't know, probably maybe like 2 or 3 years old, I had this rocking chair. And it's like a horse, and you know those old school horse rocking chair things. Mm-hmm. So I was had a rocking chair, and this is like a kind of a two part, but basically every time I would get off the rocking chair, my mom would tell me that the horse rocking chair would move and then stop. Like she'll see it like move on its own, like somebody's on it, and then stop. And then one day I was on the couch, and you know, again, I was 2, 3 years old, and my mom was in the kitchen cooking, and she hears me like fussing with somebody. And I'm like, stop messing with me, stop. And mind you, I'm on the couch by myself. And she goes, hey, who are you talking to? And she goes, I go, it's Vaughn. Vaughn is, you know, messing with me. He's messing with me. He's messing with me. She was like, wait, who? And I said the name again, Vaughn. And she goes, oh, my God. So she rushes over, grabs me, and runs out the house. And she tells me, like, later on, I was like, well, who was that? And she was like, that was your cousin who died before you were born. And you said his name. And, like, he was a trickster and a prankster and all this other stuff. So... not only he was messing with my rocking chair to like mess with her, but like he was like, you know, kind of just like being a prankster and messing with me. And she was like, how did you even know that name? Like you, like that person died before you even born. So that was one story right there. So
do you remember that yourself, or do you just remember your mom telling you about all that? Like, do you actually remember seeing or hearing or experiencing Vaughn?
No, I don't. I was young. I don't.
So you remember the retelling of this story about Vaughn?
I remember the rocking chair, very like, you know, vaguely, but like besides that, no.
If you had to just sort of like just take wild guesses, like what do you think is the practical reason that Vaughn would have been just like messing with you and your mom? Like, is there nothing else in the afterlife that would have just been interesting other than just like messing with a small child and freaking them out? Like what do you think the motivation would be for a ghost to do something like that? Like these poltergeists?
Various reasons, to be honest. I feel like, you know, whatever, you know, they feel like they need to do if they're still here on Earth or in this realm. You know, certain things could, you know, they have unfinished business, or they just want to visit somebody because they miss them, whatever the case may be. And I think that, you know, there's different types, right? There's different types of entities. There's humans, which are like spirits, and then there's other entities that are not human. So, and I feel like, to be honest, the spirits that aren't human, it's kind of like that movie Constantine, where they're like all about influence, where they're influencing you to do something good or bad. And that's all they can do. You know, they can't physically come and kill you and all this other stuff, but like they can influence you. So I feel like, you know, that is a part of whatever they're trying to do. It's all about influence and, you know, kind of seeing what happens. But yeah, I feel like there's various reasons on why there's ghosts or spirits around. So,
well, for sure, next time we talk, we're going to get into angels and demons and ghosts and interdimensional creatures and stuff. This one was a little more practical. We did like Nickelodeon and AI and crypto, and look at all the cool different topics that we can jump around. So
yeah, for sure.
We get along really well because we find all the same stuff interesting. And I just want to give just a shout out to the Constantine comic series. If you've seen the movie and you like it, if you've never read the comic series, it is like so superior to anything that Hollywood's been able to make out of Constantine. So it's one of the better comic book series that I would highly recommend if you like it.
Okay, for sure. I gotta check that out.
Wrapping this up, just another plug where people can find you. Shout out your platform, shout out your different social media accounts, just everything.
Okay. Yes, you can find me on Instagram at Maverick Approach. My X account is Mav Approach, M-A-V Approach. Also, you can find me on YouTube, which is Maverick McFly on YouTube. And then also my Patreon. Check out my Patreon. I have my exclusive Nickelodeon interview up there right now. It's patreon.com/TheMaverickApproach.
Are you on TikTok still?
I'm on TikTok. It's The Maverick Approach. And then also, I'm also on, what else? Oh, just go to my site, maverickapproach.com.
There you go. And I'm just curious too, like, are you been following the TikTok? Like, is TikTok really about to be banned and your just account's going to be gone? Or is that just all a bunch of sort of fear mongering?
I feel like it's fear mongering, to be honest, because a lot of people don't do their research and find out that TikTok is actually 60% owned by foreign money, which includes us. So they want them to divest the other 20%. I feel like they'll come up with some kind of solution or whatnot. I don't think they'll ban it because it's too much, you know, money and a lot of, you know, it's a part of our fabric now in society in America. So they'll find a way, and I don't think it's going to go anywhere.
I feel like TikTok getting banned really means that the next time you open it up, you're going to have to like dismiss some warning that's like, warning, this is banned. You're like, yeah, okay. And then you just go back to TikTok and everything's the same.
Right, exactly. Have some type of disclaimer. You know, maybe you'll have to go through a paywall for, you know, unfiltered stuff. Something
some training gonna... that's like, I promise not to fall for CCP programming.
Right. Something like that. Right. So I don't think it's going anywhere though.
All right, man. Well, thanks again for hanging out with me. I'm going to roll some credits. If you want to hang out, we'll chat for a few minutes afterwards. But otherwise, thanks for coming on for another episode. If you want to see your names in the credits, join the Patreon, and I'll pop you into the back of all these. Your support is greatly appreciated. This is everything I do now. I do content and I publish comics. It's literally the only thing that I got going for me. So come and support your boy. American stickers, cryptids, cults, and killers. We got all your favorite conspiracies. And more on our sticker sheets. Paranoid American stickers. They'll make you smile and snicker. False flags and secret societies. All of these and more on our sticker sheets.
Explore the unique with Paranoid American sticker sheets. Unearth tales of cryptids, cults, and mysteries through each sticker. These won't last long. Get yours now at ParanoidAmerican.com.
Well, all American stickers, cryptids, cults, and killers, killers. We got all your favorite conspiracies. All of that and more on our sticker sheets. Paranoid American stickers. They'll make you smile and snicker. False flags and secret societies. All of these and more on our sticker sheets.
What the heck are you waiting for? Discover the extraordinary with Paranoid American sticker sheets. From cryptids in the night to cults out of sight, each sticker is a unique find. Get yours now at ParanoidAmerican.com.
Paranoid. Yo. memorable. My life away, driven to write the page. Will it enlighten your brain? Give you the flight, my plane, paper, the highs ablaze. Somewhat of an amazing feel when it's real, the real. You will engage it. Your favorite, of course, the Lord of an arrangement. I gave you the proper results to hit the pavement. If they get emotional hate, maybe your language, a game, how they playing it well without Lakers. Evade them, whatever the cost, they are the shapeshift. Snakes get decapitated, met is the apex. Execution of flame, you out nuclear bomb. Distributed at war, rather gruesome for eyes to see. Max them out, then I light my trees. Blow it off in the face, you're despising me for what though? Calculated and rather cutthroat. Paranoid American must be all the blood smoke for real. Lord, give me a day away, vacate. They wait around to hate whatever they say. Man, it's not in the least bit weak. Heavy rotate when the beat hits. So thank us, you're welcome. Fuck the niggas for real, you're welcome. They ain't never had a deal, you're welcome. Man, they lacking appeal, you're welcome. Yet they doing it still, you're welcome.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.